Live Creative Now, episode 23.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hey, brilliant. This is Live Creative Now, the podcast for anyone with a creative hunger, whether you think of yourself as a quote-unquote non-artist, or if you think of yourself as an artist or writer or whatever, or if you think of yourself as anything in between, because no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive, and it is how you change the world. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, Passion Pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full-color creative life. Today, I dive into a question from Claudia, who joined one of the live monthly Q&A calls that I've been hosting for the podcast. Claudia shared that she finds it really hard to keep focus, and I had a lot to say on that topic. But first, this episode is sponsored by The Great Clutter Bust, 30 days to clear your clutter and finally create your dream space and change your life, man. When you get rid of your clutter, it is amazing how your life starts to shift. And you won't believe how much fun you can have clearing clutter. It sounds kind of crazy, but it's true. When I ran the Great Clutter Bust last year, people said that over and over and over. Who knew how fun this was going to be? It starts tomorrow, October 1st. And when you join, you also get full access to everything in the Creative Sandbox. The Creative Sandbox is my membership community, and it's designed to help you, guess what, feed your creative hungers and live a full-color creative life. You can find out everything you need to know about the Great Clutter Bust and about the Creative Sandbox at greatclutterbust.com. That's greatclutterbust.com. Now, before we get onto the main juice of today's episode, I want to share a quote from one of my listeners, Lisa Peppersatkin, who said the following on our last Live Creative Now live Q&A call.
I just love being here. You always inspire me. 25 minutes I get of Melissa juice is enough to last me a whole month.
Oh my God, Melissa juice. I love that. It totally made my day. Thank you so much, Lisa. If you want to leave me a message, whether it's just some feedback like that or a question that you'd like to have answered on the podcast, go to my website and you will find a little recording device at the bottom of every single page and also at livecreativenow.com/questions, where you can leave me a message and I would absolutely love to hear from you. So with that, on with today's episode. So tell me a little bit more about, you say you find it hard to keep focus. Tell me a little bit more about what's going on with you.
I find I have my finger in lots of pies, trying to keep up with all the social media sites and trying to market myself and then actually doing getting hired and doing jobs and then following through on that. It just seems like I'm going in lots of directions. And it might just be part of my temperament that I like, that I need a lot of stimulation. But then I find I get overstimulated and I kind of fall apart for a while. So this is just reminding me a little bit of your comment in the Creative Sandbox about not feeling inspired, although it's not that I'm not inspired right now. I feel unfocused.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, how do you determine how you're going to focus your energies?
Oh, that's a great question. How do I determine how I'm going to focus my energies? Well, I can tell you what works best for me. And the first thing is to spend some time really processing. And for me, that usually takes the form of journaling. Mm-hmm. So really just a lot of free writing. Ideally, I do this every morning and I just ramble. I just do a brain dump. And with the intention of usually sometimes I end up writing a draft blog post or something like that, but usually a big part of my intention is to figure out what I want to focus on for the day, for the week, for, a longer stretch of time, whatever. So that's the first thing I do. And then the other thing that I am, I have figured out is I need a place to capture what I discover in those processing sessions, because what has a tendency to happen is I'll do a lot of processing, multiple pages on my journal, and then I move on and I can't remember that stuff. So yeah. I'm a big fan of Evernote, which is an application that it's web-based, and it's also an application on your computer and an app on all of your mobile devices. So it's everywhere with you. And you can, it's basically a big digital file cabinet where you can archive anything and everything in your world, including audio and pictures and websites and notes and checklists and whatever you want. And so I've been using that to compile. In fact, I was just doing that before this call, is compiling like big goals of things that I want to remember. And I don't want to let like slip through the cracks because I've forgotten about them. Mm-hmm. That's the second piece, is creating some kind of container where you know you'll be able to go back and find the things that are your goals, right? Mm-hmm. And then the next thing is prioritizing. And oh my God, we hate prioritizing, because either we want it all and we want it all now, or it's a lot of times the steps that are required to accomplish goals are not always fun. And so we don't want to do any of it, right? So, but figuring out what is most important to you for now or for this chunk of time, right? And that is, for me, that's a lot of figuring out what my bigger goals are, like having a 6 month to 12 month chief initiative kind of goal. Often for my business, at least, I have that. Mm-hmm. And then always keeping that front of mind as I create my goals underneath that. Are they pushing forward this larger goal? Maybe my larger goal is to be healthy and happy. I don't know. I mean, that's not a super measurable goal, but maybe it's to be creating every day, or to I have a fitness goal right now. I want to get more exercise in my more movement, but I want it to be fun movement, more movement into my world. So these are the kinds of goals that might get captured. And then as I'm prioritizing how to figure out which thing to tackle next, I have found for me and for clients that 3 is a really magic number, that if I focus on no more, it could be fewer than 3, but no more than 3 big pushing me forward goals. Like for each week, I have 3 sort of larger goals that are not single tasks, that require multiple pieces to make them happen. Mm-hmm. 3 big goals that are going to push me forward. And then when I know what those 3 goals are, then that helps me to figure out what I want to focus on each day. If I know that I want to accomplish by next Monday, I want to accomplish, I'm not thinking of something right now, but if I want to accomplish some big project, then I'm going to have to break that project down into steps, into different little pieces. And then I can sort of designate throughout the week which pieces are going to go where. And you can, some people do that in a very extremely structured, like from 9 to 10 every day I do X, and from 10 to 11 I do Y, etc. That doesn't work super well for me. It works better for me to sort of think modularly, So like, I know I want to accomplish, say, 90 minutes of writing on a blog post or something today, or 90 minutes of writing, say I want 90 minutes of writing this week. So how do I want to chunk those out? Well, how does it work well for me to chunk it out? Do I work best in a 90 minute chunk, or do I work best in 3 30 minute chunks, or 9 10 minute chunks? You know, what is going to work best for me? And, you know, you know what's going to work best for you. The other thing to think about when you're figuring out what you're going to focus your attention on at during your day and at any time during your day is what is your energy level like? Mm-hmm. Like for me, from 2 to 4, I am low energy. That's when I want to take a siesta. And if I have to do something like getting me to write or do something that's high creative intensity at that time during the day is just, it's a losing battle. So it works much better for me to do my high intensity, really creative, push forward kind of activities. For me, it works earlier in the day. So these are things where, you know, pull out your microscope and your magnifying glass. You know, you get to be a detective and a scientist and figure out what, pay attention to and keep track of what works for you to help you stay focused. The other thing that's really been helpful for me is having a morning ritual.
Yes.
And I have converted to being a morning person, and because my circadian rhythms, my body really wants me to be a morning person. That's like what I physically need, but I resisted it for years and years and years and years because I want to just keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. And then I, you know, you get your second wind after 11 o'clock and boy, it's easy to keep going for 3 hours, but it just like shreds me. So I've become a morning person. Everybody has different circadian rhythms. Some people going to bed at 2, that's their optimum. That's what their body likes best. My understanding is that the reason that people have these different variations is that if you think about a tribe living out in a surrounded by wild animals or whatever, if some people stay up later naturally and some people go to bed earlier and get up earlier naturally, you're gonna have fewer hours where you're not protected or somebody's not alert, right?
Makes sense.
Yeah, that's what I think makes a lot of sense, right? So figuring out what your circadian rhythms really want from you and giving yourself that, that's also really key. And whatever your circadian rhythms are, I'm sure this is not a universal thing, but so many people that I have interacted with and talked to and read about and stuff find that having a first thing in their day ritual is super, super helpful. One reason is if you think about when you don't have a ritual, when you say, oh, I'm going to hit the snooze button, go right back to sleep or whatever, you are essentially locking in a pattern of procrastination. Mm-hmm. If you start your day, and boy, I have done this countless times. If you start your day by checking your email on your phone or diving into Facebook on your phone, then you are setting the pattern of your day, the tone of your day at distraction, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. How can you, it's pretty much everything is sort of a matter of figuring out what works for you, what's optimal for you, and then setting up structures or scaffolds or funnels that easily sort of help to just like channel you in the on a path of least resistance, just like flowing down a slide to make your day as easy as possible. Mm-hmm. So I know, and this is something that needs constant experimentation and constant tweaking. I find in my own life, you may be different. I'm experimenting with more and more, creating more and more rituals and structures in my day and my week, and I haven't really found my sweet spot yet. But this, if you're watching on the video, mm-hmm. there's a grid behind you, and there's post-it notes on that grid. And
very
that was
colorful.
My yeah, it's colorful, and that's my attempt to figure out a weekly structure, so that I already have a morning structure, a daily morning structure, that I have an entire podcast episode about that. I don't remember what number it is.
The morning ritual, the one that's about the morning ritual?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. I talk all about my morning ritual and what was working for me in that particular moment. Things might have evolved since then. But That's what was working for me really well in that particular moment. And I'm experimenting with expanding that ritualistic approach to more sort of a broader scale. So approaching my week in that way. And so far what I figured out is working for me is, I know I want to put a podcast out on Wednesday mornings. I've promised that. That's my commitment. So that means that I've got to have a podcast done by Tuesday night, right? At the latest, unless I want to do it all nighter, which I don't want to do. So that means that Monday and Tuesday is essentially podcast creation. There's got to be time dedicated to podcast creation Monday or Tuesday, or could be the weekend. You know, I could do it on Sunday or something, but I'm looking at, okay, let's make Monday and Tuesday my podcast creation and newsletter scheduling day, time of the week. And so that means if I'm not going to be doing those things on other days of the week, what am I going to put in there? So does that make sense? Like kind of looking at how you can break things down and fit. I see it kind of like a three-dimensional puzzle, really, and putting the pieces in a way that's going to work for you. And because they're pieces, you can mush them around. If it's not working optimally, try shifting them up. The other thing is to think in terms of batching. So for example, I have learned that if I schedule calls, client calls or these kinds of calls for the courses that I run, if I schedule those at all different times throughout the week, then it makes me feel very scattered because I turn my attention away for, it's not just for the duration of the call. There's some prep time before the call where I have to get in, you know, get my tea ready and set up my space and, you know, get in the right zone or whatever. And then there's some like transition time after the call. So if I batch those calls together, have a couple in a row, two or three in a row, that kind of thing, that works better. So I'm working on figuring out, and this is in flux, but figuring out which days of the week and what times during on those days are that I'm going to make available for my phone calls, and that I'm just not available unless it's a situation where I really, really want to be able to talk to this person. And this is in my windows of availability just do not work with them, right? Mm-hmm. We always get to make exceptions. But so that's an example of batching. Another example of batching might be the things that don't take a lot of brain space, like often like clutter busting or admin work or financial data entry kind of stuff. Like I have to have brain capacity, but it's not the same. I can kind of just get in a groove and put some music on or whatever and just do it. And it's kind of mindless. I mean, I can be thinking about other things when I'm doing that. So what tasks during the week are similar enough that you can batch them together? And then super, super, super important, your creative time. This is probably the first thing that I figured out, which totally changed my life, which is to make sacred space and time for my creative time. So for me, mornings work so much better. So I set aside mornings as that's my time to write, that's my time to paint, that's my time to make music. I can do those things anytime I want throughout the day, but I have dedicated time that is set aside that I do not make appointments unless it's absolutely necessary during those times. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, I think I'm as you're talking, I'm thinking about myself, and I think the bottom line for me is that's a lot of work to do all of that, and I'm procrastinating doing that. So so I need to, I guess, journal about why is it so hard for me to initiate these routines for myself. And I'm not sure. And maybe it's the gremlins, and maybe it's because I'm trying something big and new, and I'm actually scared of it. So that could be part of it. Because
they're all
really good suggestions.
Well, and I just want to assure you, you are not alone. I resisted routine for 47 years or something. So yeah, no, you're not alone. And the other thing that I've figured that I've experienced in my own life around this issue and so many issues is I try something and I, when I finally get myself to try something, then I have the experience of, oh, how is this working? How does this feel? Even if it feels really good, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to stick in that particular time. For example, in 2012, the month of January of 2012, I did what I called my great bedtime experiment, where I committed to getting to bed, lights out, by 11 o'clock at the latest, every single night for the month of January. And I did that. And the reason that I made that work is the same one of the same things that will beat procrastination. There's some very, very big things that if you have them in place, you will beat procrastination. And one of them is accountability. And I held myself accountable by posting a blog post on my blog and letting my followers know, this is what I am doing. I commit to getting to bed every night by 11 o'clock, lights out, in the month of January, so that if I didn't succeed, I was going to have to go back to them and say, I blew it. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be able to come back and say, yay, I did it, right? Accountability is huge, absolutely huge. But back to my initial point of what I was saying just now is that worked for that month. And I kept it up for a little, I don't know, month or two after that, kind of on and, you know, most of the time. And then gradually it slipped away. And I completely fell off the wagon. This is what happens. I got back on the wagon a couple of times here and there, and then fell off the wagon again. And this is why I say the most important practice is just getting back on the wagon, because we are going to fall off the wagon. We're going to stumble. So treating ourselves with self-compassion and just getting back on, like, oh yeah, this happens. I'm human. I'm imperfect. Just like the other however many billions of people on the planet. And I can treat myself with kindness and gentleness and just gently guide myself back to where I want to be. For some reason, a few months ago, when I decided I was going to intentionally get back to an early bedtime again, it stuck. I was ready. I had made whatever other changes that I needed to make in order to finally be ready for that. But it took me, you know, that was, I started in 2012 with my great bedtime experiment. It wasn't until 2015 that it really stuck. And now it feels like life, like that's my norm now, is to get to bed before 11, even as early as 10 on some nights. I mean, it's crazy. Like, I never thought that ever happened for me. So being gentle with yourself and knowing that you're going to fall off the wagon is so, so important. And just keep getting back on. And when we're ready, we're ready. And when we're not ready. Oh, man.
That's helpful. Because when I fall off the wagon, then I don't, it's like, oh, God, I've done this again. And I'm never going to get it. I'm never going to make that habit stick. And so therefore I just quit.
Yes. This is similar to what's known as, in scientific circles, this is known as the what the hell effect. And what happens is, you see, and it was first sort of labeled in the realm of dieting and food, you know, eating right, stuff like that. Here's what happens. People set a goal and they're going forward and they're doing their goal, and then they stumble. They, you know, binge one day, or they have a food that they've forbidden themselves from having because of their diet or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they get so frustrated and upset that they then say, what the hell? And they seek comfort for their stumble, because they feel so badly about it, they seek comfort for it. And what do? To seek comfort for it, usually they turn to the very thing, like, yeah, they overeat, right? Or if they're trying to quit smoking, they just smoke the whole pack. It's like, oh, what the hell? I had one cigarette, I blew it. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna smoke the whole pack. Trying to quit drinking, well, I blew it. I had a drink. What the hell? I'm going to drink myself into oblivion. So a group of researchers decided that they wanted to, they could see that when people responded in this way by beating themselves up, that it led to this what the hell effect. And they wanted to see what would happen if people responded with self-compassion. So they developed a study, called the donut study, where they invited women dieters into a lab, ostensibly to taste test candies. And they, first thing, women came into the lab. These women are all trying to lose weight. And the researchers presented them with a tray of all different kinds of donuts and directed them to pick a donut and eat it. And so they did. And then the researchers gave them a full glass of water and directed them to drink that full glass of big glass of water. So now, not only did they blow their diet, right, but they felt uncomfortably full. So they're really, really aware that they had just blown their diet, and they're probably feeling pretty crappy about it. Mm-hmm. So at this point, the control group was let into a room with a bunch of different bowls of candies, and they were given a clipboard where they were just ostensibly to rate the candies, and they were told, eat as many as you like. The experiment group, the only difference was that they were given a very small self-compassion intervention that went something like this. Oh, you know, before you go into the room, we just wanted to say we've noticed that a lot of people, after they eat the donut, feel really badly. And we wanted to just remind you, first of all, you're doing it for science, and we told you to do it. And second of all, you know, everybody blows their diet sometimes, so don't be too hard on yourself for that. That was it. And then they were let into the candy tasting room. Now, the candies were not, the scientists didn't care about the, it wasn't a taste test. They just threw out the forms where the women were rating the candies. The candies had all been carefully weighed, so they could know how much candy each woman ate. And the really, really fascinating thing is that the women who were given the self-compassion intervention ate one-third the amount of candy as the women who did not get the self-compassion intervention. Mm-hmm. So which suggests that self-compassion prevents people from going into the what the hell effect. And I can speak from my own experience, that is definitely true for me in so many ways. The other thing about self-compassion is that it helps us achieve our goals. So another study was done with people who had a goal to develop a fitness habit, to get to the gym a certain number of times during the week, I believe it was. And again, some people were trained in self-compassion, in being able to mindfully notice what was going on with them and how they're feeling, to recognize that they're blowing it and they're feeling badly is just part of the human condition. And you know, everybody blows it sometimes, and we're taught how to treat themselves kindly and gently and lovingly and not beat themselves up. And the people who were trained in self-compassion achieved their fitness goals were much more successful at achieving their fitness goals than those who were not, because those who were not said, oh, I blew it again. I can't, there's no way I'm ever going to develop this habit. Forget it. Right. Mm-hmm. So that this is why my golden formula is my golden formula. This is why it's like the number one key thing. And that is self-awareness plus self-compassion equals the key to everything good. So it's noticing. It's actually the mindfulness piece within self-compassion. According to Kristen Neff, the world's foremost researcher in self-compassion, self-compassion is made up of three components: mindfulness. You have to be able to notice what's going on with you and so kind of step outside of it in order to like be aware of it, not be swept off by it, right? Mm-hmm. So mindfulness, an appreciation that it's human, you're part of the human family. This is just the human experience, that stumbling or being imperfect or making a mistake or whatever, it's part of the human condition. And the third is self-kindness and self-love and treating yourself gently. So when you can do those things, really the world transforms. It's quite amazing. And it's a practice. And I get to practice, we all get to practice self-compassion with our self-compassion practice, because we are going to be imperfect at it. There are going to be times where we beat ourselves up. So instead of beating ourselves up for beating ourselves up, we can treat ourselves compassionately.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Yeah, great question, Claudia. Thank you.
That's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you would like to get a chance to chat with me live, like Claudia did, and ask your own question about living a full-color creative life, you can. Through the end of 2015, I am holding live calls on the first Tuesday of every month. Just go to livecreativenow.com/questions and click the big green button to register. It's totally free. That's livecreativenow.com/questions. Meanwhile, if you're getting value out of this podcast, the best way to thank me is to tell your friends and leave a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. Ratings and reviews make a really big difference in how the show is ranked in the iTunes store, and that makes a big difference in helping other people find it, and that helps grow the creative uprising. So you can play an important role in this movement simply by leaving a review. Plus, I would be super duper grateful. Meanwhile, don't forget that the Great Clutter Bust starts tomorrow, October 1st. So this is the last day to sign up. You can do that right at greatclutterbust.com. That's greatclutterbust.com. Thanks again for joining me. And until next time, go get creating. Mwah!
Live creative now. Live creative now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.